Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and good evening to all of you, and welcome to the Constitutionalist number 17. We have changed nights to Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Central Time. It just works out a little bit better for scheduling. For me and Bull, we both have a busy career, let's put it that way. So we're happy to start our new nights on Thursday nights, and I will move my radio show to a different night. That is unannounced yet. I don't know when that will be, but that's okay. I'm happy that we're on Thursday nights. This is when I can make it work, and it works better for Bull also. So, but anyway, welcome to Constitutionalist number 17. I am one of your hosts. My name is Jeremy Johnson, and I sit on the executive board at large for the Constitutional Republic Party, and we're here with the chair of the Constitutional Republic Party, and he goes by the name of Travis Bull Johnson. Travis, how you doing tonight, my brother?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Doing good. Looking forward to this conversation tonight. And I think it was a very important amendment that changed the way our country worked. And basically changed the type of government we had, I believe.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to discuss about the 17th Amendment. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, I have to mute my phone for about 15 minutes probably here during the show, and I apologize for that. But Bull's got a lot of stuff, a lot of information to tell you guys tonight. But I'm just going to start off this show just so if you don't hear me and I'm silent for about 10, 15, 20 minutes, that's why, but it'll be okay. Bull's got a lot of information. So the 17th Amendment was passed by Congress on May 13th of 1912, and it was ratified on April 8th of 1913. The 17th Amendment modified Article 1, Section 3 of the Constitution by allowing voters to cast direct votes for U.S. senators. Prior to its passage, senators were chosen by state legislators. If you think back to that, now, me and Bull were just talking about this pre-show, how volatile politics are now, and it always has been, but especially now. Do you think that the Republicans and Democrats could come to some kind of an agreement on who they want to place as a state senator for, you know, to go to D.C. to represent whatever state you reside in? I couldn't imagine what kind of crazy, wish-washy crap we would have if that was still allowed today. Thank God for the 17th Amendment. It's one of the amendments that I actually really agree with after the original Bill of Rights. So an example, I wanted to give you an example of something. Senator Feinstein died in California, and Governor Newsom had to choose a replacement for her seat in the Senate. Now, I'm under the understanding that his replacement has an address of Maryland, I believe, and she has stated that she will not be running for reelection. Just putting that out there. But I want you to imagine, ladies and gentlemen, how would you feel if your state legislatures were picking who was representing you in the Senate? I know me personally, my opinion, I would absolutely despise that. I honestly despise the two senators we have now. I don't think they do a good job, but that's just my opinion. But Bo, what are your thoughts on the 17th Amendment?
Well, I think the 17th Amendment radically changed our form of government. And the reason I say that is originally the government was divided into, of course, your House of Representatives. The House of Representatives weren't meant to represent us, the people. The president was supposed to be basically represent the country as a whole. Well, you have another little step in between the people and the federal government, which is the state. And the Senate positions were meant to represent the states. It was supposed to be three, just like you have three branches of government, you're supposed to have three separate representatives, I guess you could say, being a part of that government, for the federal government, the Senate, and the House of Representatives. Well, when the 17th Amendment passed, that changed that. That now took that power away from the states to determine who is going to represent the states and put it into the hands of the people. So now the people have had complete control, and this did a couple things. One, without having senators who are responsible to the states instead of the people, it basically allowed the states to be neutered. There was nobody to protect the powers given to the states by the Constitution, and that created a vacuum that the federal government was then able to take over more and more powers that were supposed to belong to the states, because the states weren't able to stop that from happening. Because, again, the states no longer had representatives in that lawmaking organization known as United States Congress. These senators didn't have to go back and answer to their state legislators or governors or anything like that anymore like they had to do previously. So basically it allowed the states just to be overrun, I guess you could say, as far as they just basically lost all power that states had in the federal government. This was not what the original framers of the Constitution intended. I think this is one of those amendments that, again, drastically changed the way our government was meant to function. And a lot of things we look at today was because of a lot of the issues we have today were because, I believe, of that change. It's one of those amendments that I'm just totally against, because, again, I believe it was against what the framers intended for our government. It basically changed our government. The name of our party has always been the Constitutional Republic Party. And part of that is, with a republic, the people are represented by representatives within that government. And those people are supposed to make decisions for the people. And that's basically what the Senate was doing, is the people elected their representatives to their state legislators, and those people then selected the senators. And again, you just completely eliminated that step. And it's kind of what's made us more into a hybrid now between a democracy, a true democracy, and a republic. So, yeah, I've got some harsh feelings on that. And I understand part of the reasoning for it. I mean, we discussed this a little bit before the show started. Part of the reason was, okay, you have a split legislature. You have half the the House is Democratic held, and the state Senate is Republican held. Well, no, they're not going to get together and decide on a representative for senator. And it left vacancies sometimes a year or 2 years, because that state legislator just could not decide and agree on who that senator would be. So it left the people unrepresented. The other thought process was that if we put it in the hands of the people, well, if it's in the hands of the state legislator, there's a lot less people for corporations or companies or industries to basically be able to bribe to get their representative elected if they put it in the hands of the people. Well, they can never bribe that many people. Well, yeah, we see how that worked. I mean, it's actually easier for corporations to influence the general population than it was for a handful of representatives or senators. They're still spending the same money. It's just going to media sources instead of, I guess, a campaign reelection campaigns or something. I mean, it definitely even though that was one of the purposes for the 17th Amendment was to try to halt or stop that corruption, it hasn't. I mean, it was supposed to, the thought process was that would take a lot of the money out of the politics, and it really hasn't done that at all.
It almost seems like, I know I said that it's one of the amendments that I agree with past the original Bill of Rights, which I really don't agree with anything past the 10th Amendment. But this was one that I thought, obviously not very deeply about, but I thought, you know, do we want these crazy lunatics that are in office in our legislature able to pick who is, you know, representing us in Senate? But then you mentioned something, Bull, and it kind of got me. It's like, wait a minute. They kind of are already anyway, because look at who we have in Minnesota. You have at least two-thirds of our state is red, but we're rocks and cows. But you look, two-thirds of our state voted for Trump. Two-thirds of our state are red. But we have two Democratic representatives. So exactly how is this really working for us? I mean, is the 17th Amendment really working for us? And I'm going to mute my phone now. So go ahead and do your thing, brother.
Yeah. Well, and here's to counter on that argument or that comment you just said. It's a very narrow selection right now with the Senate between the Republicans and the House. If the Republicans could would be able to have swung the Senate, where you have that split Congress, well, guess what? We wouldn't have a senator like Tina Smith, far left senator out there like Tina Smith, okay? Because they would have to find somebody who is kind of in the middle instead of being on the fringes like Tina Smith is, that could get enough people within both sides of the legislature to approve it or to select it. But it's an amendment that time has changed over me. I mean, I remember when I was 10th grade going through American government or civics classes, and when we covered the 17th Amendment, my initial thought was probably like, well, it should always belong to the people. Why didn't it belong to the people in the first place? And it took me a long time of seeing how things actually work and getting a better understanding for what the framers intended with their checks and balances of the Constitution for me to understand. And you know what? Part of that was, again, all about checks and balances. I mean, it was meant to have the people it was meant to provide some type of balance between the powers. And instead, I mean, it's just you basically have swung this to the point where, yes, the people are in control, and yes, they get to an extent the people are supposed to be in control. But when you get to any type of majority rules, and that's kind of how this has changed this to strictly being a majority rules type of thing, are the rights of the minority really protected? And I don't feel they are anymore because you know what? For the majority, they're the ones who are screaming. I mean, they're the ones who are saying, hey, yes, this is the way it's supposed to be, because the majority always benefits by the majority. But the part of this country is supposed to be, I mean, to be able to protect everybody so that everybody was represented in some way. And I just don't feel like the changes made to the 17th Amendment properly did that. I mean, again, it basically left the states powerless to fight against the federal government's overreach. And basically the government has been overreaching for that last 120 years easily. I mean, this amendment, I believe, was in the 1912, 1913 time frame. And in my mind, it changed the type of government we were intended to have. I mean, there was supposed to be those checks and those balances. There were supposed to be these separate entities. They represented separate groups. And part of it is, I mean, let's face it, in the 1800s, basically senator slots were almost bought. I mean, it was whoever could go in there and wine and dine and smooth the most state representatives got to be senator. I mean, it was almost a prestige thing. It was a, and that's part of the way they were able to get the 17th Amendment passed was, I mean, basically calling it a millionaire's club, because that's basically what it was. And to a certain extent, until recent times, we've been able, you can see the difference between the House and Senate in their decorum, in the type of behavior that was allowed. The House was more the common man, and the Senate was more the genteel class, those who are rich, those who are raised a certain way with a certain thought process towards proper etiquette, and certain ways of, well, things are done this way. I mean, it was all about the debate, the argument, not the yelling and the screaming that you would typically see in the English Parliament. Where it's just basically an all-out yelling. That's kind of how our House of Representatives has started to turn into. But you know what? It was supposed to be that way. It was supposed to have those different views, so to speak, those different avenues, with the hope that something in the middle would be what was always landed on, to get away from the extremes from either side. And unfortunately, the extremes have basically taken over from both sides, and I think that's part of what I think has been the downfall of our government. Started with that 17th Amendment. I'm not quite like Jeremy in the feeling that anything after the 10th was a mistake or was bad. I mean, I think there are some very good reasons for some of these amendments. Just the 16th and the 17th are two ones that I've got quite a bit of heartburn in. I just don't necessarily agree with, but they are they are today's Constitution. They are the letter of the law, and while I may not necessarily agree with them, I mean, I kind of have to say, yeah, that's the way it is. I may not agree with it. I may wish it was something different, but my wishing it was something different doesn't make it that way. That is basically the supreme law of the land. And unless we do another amendment to revoke it and change it, and I really don't see that ever being feasible, then we have to learn how to keep the original intent of the framers without violating what the Constitution currently reads. Jeremy mentioned a little bit about the appointment of the senator by Governor Newsom. And one thing I was telling him, that portion has never changed. It has always been the rights of the governor to be able to choose that person in a time of a vacancy. Let's not forget, that's how Tina Smith, the far left senator from Minnesota, originally got elected. Was because she was lieutenant governor under Tim Walz, and Al Franken resigned due to the sexual harassment complaints against him. So the governor got to choose who the replacement was, and he chose Tina Smith. And that's how my former opponent for U.S. Congress served as lieutenant governor, Michelle Fischbach. She was a pro temp of the Senate. And when the lieutenant governor needed to be replaced because she was appointed to senator, then Michelle Fischbach took over as lieutenant governor, which basically allowed them to kill two birds with one stone. They took a leader out of the Republican Senate and made her lieutenant governor, which basically neutered her completely in that role, because she couldn't buck the governor. or had no real authority to buck the governor. And, of course, they moved the needle to the left as far as our senators are concerned. And make no mistake, I mean, Tina Smith is by far, I think, a fringe left senator. I follow her on Twitter, and it boggles my mind the things she decides to champion. And I think that's one of the reasons why you have the in 2024 here in Minnesota is we have one of our Senate slots up for re-election. That one's held by Amy Klobuchar, which is she's turned more to the left, but she's been considered somebody who's more of a centrist in the past. And here we are less than a year out from that re-election. Not one Republican has really shown any interest in challenging Amy Klobuchar. And one reason for that is they're trying to keep their powder dry because they see Tina Smith as being the real vulnerable senator because she's so far to the left. It's what's going to make things real interesting for our party, the Constitutional Republic Party, as well as the other minor parties like the Libertarian Party and the Legal Marijuana Now Party in 2024, because in order to be recognized in Minnesota as a political party, at least a minor political party, you need to win at least 1% of a statewide of election every 4 years. 2022, the Libertarians did not have anybody run for statewide office. So if they don't get a candidate that scores at least 1% on this Senate election, then they're no longer a recognized party in the state of Minnesota. For our party, the Constitutional Republic Party, we are not currently recognized in Minnesota as a political party. We're a political organization, and we don't get to claim that political party mantle in Minnesota along with all the benefits of being a political party unless we run somebody in a statewide election that can garner at least 1% of the vote. So this benefits us in a lot of cases, the fact that you don't really have any Republican who's willing to run against Amy Klobuchar for Senate, because they don't want to take that L going into the 2026 election when Tina Smith is up there. Klobuchar is also going to be very tough to beat. It is a lot of work and a lot of money to run for U.S. Senate. And Republicans don't, I mean, the big party, the big money is not going to waste their money on a seat that they see as a sure lock for the Democrat. So any Republican running is not going to get any help from the state party. They're not going to really get any help from the national party. It is all going to be on them to run. And people don't run for that and run for politics with the intention of losing money. And that's what they would basically do if they tried to run for Senate, because, again, they will never get the money that they will need to be competitive against Amy Klobuchar. Because there's nobody on the Republican bench in this state that really gets people that excited. So they're all just trying to sit back and wait till 26 when Tina Smith is up for re-election. So yeah, it's going to make things very interesting. I know our party, we are still trying to locate a suitable candidate to run for U.S. Senate for us in Minnesota. It's a hard sell. Because as I mentioned, I mean, for those of you who may not be familiar, I ran for U.S. Congress in Minnesota's 7th District. Minnesota's 7th District is basically almost the entire western portion of the state. Just running for Congress in that Big Bend area, I mean, we spent probably $40,000 to $50,000 for a congressional race and didn't really do any ads. This is a lot of like internet ads, this was like T-shirts and stuff like that. I mean, but we really didn't even – we didn't touch anything but the western half of the state, and it still cost us $50,000 to run. Now, granted, we did win – we did get 6% of the vote, which would have been – which would basically be more than enough to get us a – what we need on a – for a Senate level race. But it took me politicking for basically 20 months to do that. So to ask somebody to run for Senate, unless they've got a big bank behind them and who really believe in the cause, really believe in people having an option and people being able to get in there and say, you know what, I want more options than these two, it's not an easy thing to ask somebody to do. Especially against somebody like Amy Klobuchar, who most people are like, yeah, there's probably not going to be anybody who's out there to able to beat them. And the Libertarians are in the same situation. Libertarians actually have an extra bullet in the gun that we do not have, in the fact that they will have a presidential nominee. And if their presidential nominee gets at least 1% in Minnesota, that will also gain them – let them retain their minor party status. But if you look at their list of presidential candidates, I don't know that they have a presidential candidate that will really get the people fired up enough to go out there and vote for them. I mean, I've got there's a couple of them out there for the Libertarians that I like, that I want to hear more from and see more of. Mike DeMatt is one of them. My buddy Joshua Smith is another one. On the Libertarian side, but again, those two people aren't well enough known in Minnesota and aren't going to spend the leg time in Minnesota to get Minnesotans to know them enough for them to be comfortable with gaining 1% of the electorate. Of the votes in Minnesota for president, especially if we're going to have a highly contested race between a Biden and a Trump. And so they really, they don't have anybody really on their bench either ready to make that run for the Senate race. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of that that plays out. I know that I'm interested to see really how the next month or 2 months play out between a lot of these our own party as well as the Libertarian Party. The Libertarian Party had a lot of shakeup this past week, where their chair resigned. The chair of the Libertarian Party from Minnesota resigned, basically stating that with the messaging going out on their social media sites, that she didn't have enough control over the people running those sites, and she didn't agree with a lot of what they were posting. But because she is the chair, she basically had to own or let those postings reflected upon her as chair of the party. And she wasn't happy with that. So she felt that she had to resign because she did not want to be saddled with the messaging that was coming out from their social media teams. Immediately following her, at least two other members of the executive committee resigned, stating the same thing. So there is a lot of chaos going on in the Libertarian Party right now. Which is disappointing because, I mean, I'm a former member of that party, and while I left the party because I didn't feel it was a good fit for me, I still would like to see them do well. And right now, I mean, if they can't even get their own house in order, how are they going to run a candidate capable of being able to secure enough of the electorate to maintain their status as a minor party? I actually went on their webpage or their Facebook page last week and basically told them that and said, hey, if y'all get – y'all, you guys need – nobody's going to want to run to represent you guys if they don't know that y'all are going to be united behind their back, and they have so much chaos, it would be a hard ask to get anybody to, because as I mentioned, it costs a lot of money, but you could do it if you have a real strong team, united team behind you, willing to do the groundwork, willing to do the legwork. But again, if they're so busy fighting amongst themselves, they can't very well unite behind any type of candidate. That is one of the things I consider as a pretty good strength with our organization, the Constitutional Republic Party, in the fact that we do have, we are relatively united. We believe in the Constitution. That is our guiding principle. And we understand that when we do messaging or anything else, if that distracts from our support of our belief or our showing our support of the Constitution, then that messaging has no room in our party. And so I'm very happy with.
Yeah, I heard.
Thank you, because I was even. We've been talking about the upcoming Senate race. I've been listening.
I've been kind of listening with my left ear while I'm listening to my company with my right, and then I excuse myself to my bedroom so I could join the conversation because I've been gone for about 20 minutes, and I didn't want to leave you hanging for too long. But, you know,
You were just talking about the
Constitutional Republic Party and what our vision is. And I want people to understand something because I agree with Bull wholeheartedly, and he knows that. I might say some things, and I might give my opinion on things, but I am always willing to listen, and I'm always willing to change my stance on something based off of information that I get. And I will be the first one to admit publicly and on this radio show that I don't have all the answers. I don't have all the knowledge. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of things that I need to learn and need to listen to learn. But when Bull and I disagree on something or, you know, like earlier in the show, in the broadcast, I said, you know, I really don't agree with a lot of the things past the 10th Amendment. And Bull made a good point after I put myself on mute, you know, about the 15th and the 17th Amendments. And I forgot all about allowing black people to vote, black men to vote, and black people to vote in general. I forgot all about that being after the 10th, the original Bill of Rights. So, for the second or 2,000th time this broadcast, I stand corrected. There are things that I agree with, and there's a lot of more things that I disagree with, but that's part of having a conversation about a lot of different things involving politics and the Constitution. We have to be willing to listen to each other, and we have to be willing to change our stance on something based off the information we get and the knowledge that we get in order for us to make our system better for all of us, not just one party, but for all of us. And what you're seeing right now is a hard push from both sides, the Republican and Democratic Party, that are trying to push their ideology on the other side, and all they do is they dig their heels in a little bit further and further each time, and where they get to a point where they don't even want to listen to each other anymore. And I don't think that's where we need to be as a country. I think we need to have dialogue. We need to have those conversations. And we need to have compromise. And I don't see that happening anywhere in our politics right now.
Look, a perfect example of that happened within the last 24 to 48 hours. The House passed a continuing resolution to keep the government open until the January time frame. And they split it up into two sections. Basically, half the government will run out of money on one date, the other half a week and a half or so later. Now, the reasoning they're using for doing this is because they want to actually be able to pass appropriations. Instead of just doing the government on a full-year continuing resolution, which is what they've done in the last few years, they're like, no, but we but Johnson just took over. He's like, I need time to push through these actual allocations rather than a continuing resolution. So we need to buy another 6 weeks of time. We need everybody to say, you know what, let's push things back 6 weeks so that I have actually time to work to get these allocations done. And we're going to set priorities by putting them into two groups. With that first group in sooner, those are going to have to be the ones that are going to get worked on first. And we need to give ourselves time to do that. And then that gives us another 10 days or whatever to get the other ones done. And again, I wasn't a big supporter of Johnson as speaker, but I don't think that's a bad plan. I think that was a good idea, and we didn't want the government to shut down. Let's keep things working and going through the holidays, let's put this and get the government back to running the way it's supposed to be, on individual department budgets basically. And the far right was just so pissed that he didn't demand cuts. And let's look at it this way. If they would have demanded cuts, guess what? Those cuts would have lasted for 6 weeks. Once they get everything rehashed out, they would have got all the money back. Okay, they wouldn't have meant anything, but it would have given those House Freedom people a win to go back to their people and say, hey, look, we're saving money, when they really didn't. So what did they do today? They basically refused to pass a rule that would allow Congress to continue to be working through today into tomorrow before they go off on their Thanksgiving break, and they basically left town early. So, nope, we're done working now. Okay, you just passed this continuing resolution, which gives you a short time period to actually get this budget stuff done correctly, and rather than stay there and get it, work on it and get it done, you basically say, I'm going to take my ball and go home and haul ass. There was not an adult in that room. Okay, you know what? You disagreed with what they were doing. You lost. Okay, get over it. You're being paid to basically pass a budget. I mean, that's what the Constitution. The Constitution gave you that responsibility to pass a budget and to basically be the nation's coin purse. And by refusing to let Congress continue to work and going home while you're still collecting your paycheck, but you're screaming about how much money the government is spending, as you go ahead and collect your free money as you go home and do nothing over the next week and a half, is bullshit. You're not happy with them not doing budget cuts for the continuing resolution? Then you should have stayed there and worked on the allocations and tried to find places to save money there that would actually last through the budget year and not for 30 or 45 days. Okay, they're not genuine. They're doing a dog and pony show, and they don't actually care about saving the nation money. These are the same people who voted for money that when Trump was running and basically writing blank checks. When we were $7 trillion in debt, when we had a Trump White House and Republican-held Congress and Senate. Okay, so they don't get to come out here now and play like they care about the budget. I mean, they used basically this as an excuse so they can go home and not actually have to work. I wish we had those kind of options. But we don't. So, yeah, I was when I saw that today, I'm just like, what the hell?
And the audience, the audience was applauding you, man. I wholeheartedly agree with you that a dog and pony show. You could have said it better. At this point in time, Bo, as much as I hate to say this, but I want to say it, just shut the mother effer down. You know, shut the government down until you guys can figure out how to be adults and how to govern and how to represent your constituents. Why are we paying taxes for a group of people that act like children? You said it perfectly.
Yep. Well, and you know, they're going to go home and they're going to spend this week today's raising campaign funds. Instead of being there and doing the government's work, they're going to go home and try to do stuff to raise money and ensure they stay in power. They're going to go back and they're going to bitch and whine about how they wanted to save money and they're just doing business as usual. No, it's not business as usual when you actually say, you know what, we're going to extend this for 6 weeks with the intention of passing individual appropriations, something that we haven't done. And you know what? I'm going to look it up. Okay, I'm gonna ask Mr. Google, when was the last time the government passed a budget? Let me see. So if Congress has completed appropriations before the start of the fiscal year, four times in the past 40 years. The last time, drum roll please, was 1996.
Hold on. And there you have it, folks.
I mean, the last time they did it again in time was been, well, almost 30 years. That is one of the few things that the Constitution has actually tasked Congress with. That is one of the only actual jobs they gave them, is to pass a budget. And they have not done it on time in almost 30 years.
That it baffles me that we as people, as we as American citizens, we stand idly by as we watch our border being overran, our southern border, which is part of the Constitution, is to protect our border and protect our nation. And again, I'm not against immigration. I'm not against people that are trying to make a better life. But we have rules and regulations and laws for a reason, so it doesn't get overran, so we don't get what we're seeing. Look at in Chicago right now. There's some of these people that are opting to take a flight back to Venezuela to get the hell out of Chicago. I mean, that should tell you that they're not interested in helping people. I don't know what their main goal is here. I mean, I have a guess, but I'm not going to get into that. But we got an issue here. New York City, Chicago, the L.A., they're being overran. Look at the President Xi's visit to San Francisco. They claim that they couldn't fix the homeless problem. So what do? They relocate. They said all these homeless people have people out there 24/7 with pressure washers spraying down the streets and making it look like a presentable city. All of a sudden, they fixed the homeless problem in San Francisco. No, they didn't.
Yeah, well,
they just moved them, so they're not an eyesore to the people that govern us, and that's pathetic.
Well, look, I've got a lot more respect for Mike Johnson now than I did a few weeks ago. I mean, the fact that he is because of course we know what normally happens is they pass a continuing resolution, then eventually they pass an omnibus spending bill so they don't have to pass the 12 separate appropriations. They just lump it all together and say, take it or leave it. At least Mike Johnson now is saying, no, we're not going to do an omnibus bill. We're going to actually debate and we're going to pass individual appropriations bills the way it's supposed to happen.
Right.
And I can't tell you when's the last time that actually happened. I mean,
well, explain what the omnibus bill is. These omnibus bills are what the Congress will get at on Christmas Eve at 11 o'clock at night that are 3,000 pages long that nobody has time to read, and there's a bunch of add-ons in there that hurt our country horribly. And that's what they have continued to do for I don't know how long now. But it's destroyed our country. It's destroyed our government and our institutions because of the wording that they put into these omnibus bills and the add-ons and the tag-ins. And so, yeah, I agree with you. Mike Johnson, at first I was like, okay, good. I mean, here's a guy that nobody's ever heard of. Maybe it's time to get fresh blood in as Speaker of the House and truly represent America's Republican Conservative Party. And then there's a few little things where I'm like, I'm not so sure. But then this appropriation bill he drew up, and 19 Republicans voted against it, and of course all the Democrats voted against it, I believe. And
every Democrat voted for it.
I'm sorry, I had it backwards. Yes.
Yeah.
We've got people.
Republicans voted against it.
There you go. Thank you for correcting me. For the 18th time this show, and Bull gets the reward this tonight. Usually I'm on my game. I'm just a little off tonight, but because I just had read that before we went on air, honestly. But there's people in office. Let me just put it this way: they're funded by special interests, and a lot of them are. They want their campaign funding. Like Bull brought up, you know, now they're taking a break from Congress when there's actual work to be done, and they're worried about getting reelected. And we need to get special interests money and special interests out of Washington, D.C. Like lobbyists, there shouldn't be special interest money involving lobbying to get your guy hired because he's going to vote the way you want him to vote. What happened to the constituents? No. These people are in Congress and Senate. Represent the corporations and whoever's got the bigger bankroll.
Yep.
Most of them, not all of them, I don't think, but a good majority of them are, and it's not the way our system was intended.
I mean, look at my congressional race, okay, against Michelle Fischbach. It was her who was basically an incumbent. Democrat really wasn't even a challenger. You have me running under legal marijuana now. And in 2 years, they spent $1.3 million to defeat us. $1.3 million to defeat the legal marijuana now party and a Democrat that looked like a complete idiot at the debate stage. Where do you really think that money went?
Oops, I better go back.
But so it's I will say this much. Yeah, people are complaining that they didn't cut any money out of this continuing resolution. But you know what else they didn't do? They did not fund Ukraine. They did not fund Israel. They didn't give anybody any extra money that they all wanted. Because they said, yes, we want to cut money out of this, but yeah, we also want more money for our pet wars, our military-industrial complex. So if he was going to piss people off, he pissed everybody off. He said, nobody's going to get shit. Right?
But,
Bull,
Biden just allow Iran to access $10 billion? I just read that the other day.
No, this was, I want to say it was $6 billion, and it was actually Iran's money that we basically froze when they started
doing this
stuff.
This is a new thing that just came out a couple of days. I'll have to find it and send it to you after the show so you are up to speed on it because I haven't gotten too deep into it. I just read a few sentences. It sounds like the Biden administration is allowing Iran $10 billion, access of $10 billion, and I don't know the details of that $10 billion.
It's basically, again, it's their own money that's been frozen. That they're basically just giving a 4 month waiver on some of the sanctions.
What I understood was sanction money.
My question is again. Who is the United States to take another country's $10 billion? Who are we to be able to say, you know what, we don't like what you're doing, so we're going to steal $10 billion a year dollars, and we're just not going to let you spend your money because we don't agree with what you do? Is that okay?
I think it's a little bit deeper than that, though, don't you, both?
Well, again,
with
it's
that
their
money.
It's their money that we're basically freezing.
Yeah, it's before I comment on that, I want to look into that a little bit more.
Yeah, this $10 billion is actually money that Iraq owes Iran, but they're not allowed to pay their debt to Iran because the United States has sanctions on Iran.
Okay.
So this is money that basically Iran provided to Iraq as a loan, and the United States is telling Iraq, no, you can't pay that loan back because we have sanctions on them.
So let me ask you a question then. This is kind of relating to the same subject when Obama was in office. This way we can all learn together here. There was rumors circulating or facts circulating, whatever you want to call them, that Obama sent a pallets full of cash, billions of dollars, over to Iran.
That one I don't know, because I'd have to look into that, because I don't see it. And keep in mind, my job in the military was with money. And yes, I have shown up at the planes to see millions of dollars on pallets. I was actually one of those guys who actually participated in that. There's pictures somewhere flying around with me standing between two pallets filled with $100 bills up to my armpits.
Jeez. But that's got to concern the American taxpayer also. Where's the transparency of where this money is going and how much money is going where? What is it really for? And where did this money come from? Is that obviously it's our taxpayer dollars. But what is it?
I'll give you a hint. It's got three letters, and the first one's a C. The last one's an A, and the middle one's an I.
And there's no I in team.
I mean, the CIA has been funding different groups to try to get their own political ideas moved.
The Iran-Contra scandal is one
Iran
of the perfect
Contra,
examples
of
that.
It just gotten more careful after Iran-Contra.
Yeah, yeah. So... No, I was able to stay along with you while you were on your monologue, and you did it, by the way, a damn good monologue, because you explained a lot of things, and it's good, I think, for the audience to hear what the chair of the Constitutional Republic Party has to say. There's a reason he's the chair, and I just sit on the board. And I shouldn't say just sit on the board. It's because I've got a lot to learn. Let me just put it that way. And Bull, I respect Bull immensely, and he knows that. And he's got a very bright head on his shoulders. Let's just put it that way also. So those of you that are listening, I think I would like to have Bull, me just add some commentary a little bit here and there for our future shows, but keep Bull to doing those longer monologues, because then you really get to hear what his vision is for this party. And I wouldn't be here if I didn't believe in what he has planned and what he wants to see. So I hope that the audience gets that and understands that too. So we all have opinions. And I have a lot of them, trust me. But Bull brings a lot of his, a lot of the things he says, he's backed up with knowledge and facts. And as mine are too, in different circumstances. But regarding the party and politics with the Constitutional Republic Party, I think his vision is gold. I think it's pure, and I think it's honest. So I hope the audience understands that and sees that the same way I do.
Hey, real quick, if I can, I'm going to do a shameless plug. One of the other things that we've been working on with the Constitutional Republic Party is trademarking our name. We put in for our trademark application almost a year ago, and we just recently heard back on it that we had to refile it under a different category, basically, because Constitutional Republic Party is pretty self-explanatory. It's a political party based on a constitutional republic. You can't trademark it in that way, but you can trademark the three words together to use as we're using it. To file this amended paperwork and get the legal representation to do it is basically costing us an additional $400. I will point out today is Donate to the Max Day. You've probably been seeing all kind of ads from everybody else asking for money. So I'm just going to jump on that train. And hopefully I'm not a caboose at the end of this time. But please come out to our website, constitutionalrepublicparty.us. If you can help us raise that $400 to refile that paperwork so we can basically protect our ballots, protect the when we get our party access, we want to be able to make sure that the people who are running under our name represent our values, and it's not just somebody trying to hijack the party name because they think it'll do them better. We want to be able to make sure that these people actually represent our values and believe in the Constitution. We want to be able to prevent the rhinos that we see and the dinos we see in the other party, and this will allow us to do that by saying, here's a cease and desist order from using our name. And it really makes our name mean something. So if you could go to our webpage, donate, or become a member, just anything you can to help support our party and move it forward. If we're tired of the status quo, we need to change. We need to change something. And what we need to change is the two-party system. That's what's wrong with this country. The framers of the Constitution, the founding fathers, they didn't believe in having a two-party system. This is not something that they even foresaw. They wanted representatives representing the people, not parties. I mean, that's why they're representatives, people's representatives. And right now they represent the party before the people, and we'd like to change that. So if y'all could help us with this, it'd help us protect our name in this case. And any other funds that we can get coming in will help us select and encourage our Senate candidate when we find one to help us get official party status with the state, in this case, the state of Minnesota. We're going to be going through this in every state where we're going to be represented. But it's going to be it's going to be 50 battles, one state at a time. So, again, our website is constitutionalrepublicparty.us. Come out and see what we're all about. If you agree with what we're saying, take our webpage, share it on your social media. Tell people about us. Say, you know what, we listen to the constitutionalists. I mean, and we listen to these guys talk, and what they say either makes sense, or you know what, if you don't think it makes sense, post it, tag us so we can go in there, we can discuss it with you. We have no problems with doing that, and thank you all very much. I see it's about 7 o'clock, so I'll turn this back over to Jeremy.
All right. Thanks, Bull. And, yeah, please, you see what the Republican and Democrats are dealing with as far as the two-party system fundraising. Their fundraising is huge. That's what's buying elections right now is fundraising. Who gets the most ads on TV, you know? Who gets the most ads in the newspapers and the magazines? We're just normal, everyday people, just like you and me, or just like me and Bull, or just like you and everybody else. I'm sorry, I had a word tongue twister there for myself. But anyway, you know, Bull's he lives on a farm. He does, you know, livestock. I'm a truck driver. Everybody in our party has everyday normal jobs, just like everybody else does. And we're just people that are really tired of seeing our system being corrupted by a two-party system that refuses to allow normal people, men and women like me and Bull and everybody that's involved with the Constitutional Republic Party, they don't want us involved because then the status quo changes for them. So on that note, ladies and gentlemen, you will be able to hear us Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Central Time from now on. We changed that up to make it a little bit easier for me and Bull to make sure that we were here every Thursday night rather than every Tuesday night. Tuesday nights are just really tough for me. Puts me under a lot of stress, and I don't need any more of that right now. So Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Central Time, and again, please go to the Constitutional, and it's constitutionalrepublicparty.us. All one word, constitutionalrepublicparty.us. And check out our platform. And if you have questions, you can call into the radio show on Thursday nights. We're live, we're uncensored, and Bull or myself, we'll have a conversation with you. And that phone number is 516-387-1733. And when you get through, you just press the number 1, lets us know that you want to talk on our switchboard, and you can get on here and ask the tough questions and let's have a conversation. That's how we're going to change this country. So I appreciate every one of you that listen to this show and to this broadcast, and I really hope that, you know, if you're liking what you're hearing, to go sign up and become a member of the Constitutional Republic Party and help us change this country from the ground floor. And it's going to take all of us, ladies and gentlemen. It's not going to happen overnight, but we can do it together. So on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we sure appreciate you joining the 17th episode of The Constitutionalist with the ConstitutionalRepublicParty.us. And we will see you all next Thursday night at 6 p.m. Central Time. Have a great week.